This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, I note what you say about guiding your patient's reading and taking care that he sees a good deal of his materialist friend. But are you not being a trifle naive? It sounds as if you suppose that argument was the way to keep him out of the enemy's clutches. Now, that might have been so if he had lived a few centuries earlier. At that time, the humans still knew pretty well when a thing was proved and when it was not, and if it was proved, they really believed it. They still connected thinking with doing, and were prepared to alter their way of life as the result of a chain of reasoning. But what with the weekly press and other such weapons, we have largely altered that. Your man has been accustomed, ever since he was a boy, to having a dozen incompatible philosophies dancing about together inside his head. He doesn't think of doctrines as primarily true or false, but as academic or practical, outworn or contemporary, conventional or ruthless. Jargon, not argument, is your best ally in keeping him from the church. Don't waste time trying to make him think that materialism is true. Make him think it is strong or stark or courageous, that it is the philosophy of the future. That's the sort of thing he cares about. The trouble about argument is that it moves the whole struggle onto the enemy's own ground. He can argue too, whereas in really practical propaganda of the kind I'm suggesting, he has been shown for centuries to be greatly the inferior of our father below. By the very act of arguing, you awake the patient's reason. And once it is awake, who can foresee the result? Even if a particular train of thought can be twisted so as to end in our favour, you will find that you have been strengthening in your patient the fatal habit of attending to universal issues and withdrawing his attention from the stream of immediate sense experiences. Now, your business is to fix his attention on the stream. Teach him to call it real life. And don't let him ask what he means by real. Remember, he is not, like you, a pure spirit. Never having been a human, oh, that abominable advantage of the enemies, you don't realize how enslaved they are to the pressure of the ordinary. I once had a patient, a sound atheist, who used to read in the British Museum. One day, as he sat reading, I saw a train of thought in his mind beginning to go the wrong way. The enemy, of course, was at his elbow in a moment. Before I knew where I was, I saw my 20 years' work beginning to totter. If I had lost my head and began to attempt a defense by argument, I should have been undone. But I was not such a fool. I struck instantly at the part of the man that I had best under my control and suggested that it was just about time he had some lunch. Now, the enemy presumably made the counter-suggestion, you know, how one could never quite overhear what he says to them, that this was more important than lunch. At least, I think that must have been his line, for when I said, quite, in fact, much too important to tackle at the end of a morning, the patient brightened up considerably. And by the time I had added, much better come back after lunch and go into it with a fresh mind, he was already halfway to the door. Once he was in the street, the battle was won. I showed him a newsboy shouting the midday paper and a number 73 bus going by, and before he reached the bottom of the steps, I had got into him an unalterable conviction that whatever odd ideas might come into a man's head when he was shut up alone with his books, a healthy dose of real life, by which he meant the bus and the newsboy, was enough to show him that all that sort of thing just couldn't be true. He knew he'd had a narrow escape, and in later years was fond of talking about that inarticulate sense for actuality which is our ultimate safeguard against the aberrations of mere logic. He is now safe in our father's house. You begin to see the point? Thanks to processes which we set at work in them centuries ago, they find it all but impossible to believe in the unfamiliar while the familiar is before their eyes. Keep pressing home on him the ordinariness of things. Above all, do not attempt to use science, I mean the real sciences, as a defense against Christianity. They will positively encourage him to think about realities he can't touch and see. There have been sad cases among the modern physicists. If he must dabble in science, keep him on economics and sociology. Don't let him get away from that invaluable real life. But the best of all is to let him read no science, but to give him a grand general idea that he knows it all and that everything he happens to have picked up in casual talk and reading is the results of modern investigation. Do remember, you are there to fuddle him. From the way some of you young fiends talk, anybody would suppose it was our job to teach. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
All right, letter one of Screwtape Letters. We're into it.
Yeah, it's an interesting start because it goes right into the whole idea of this relationship. It doesn't do a lot to set it up, and it's you're up and running.
Yeah, he jumps right into the context.
Yep.
So you're dealing with coach demon to mentee demon, dealing with it, your patient on how to throw him off. You know, he dives right into it. References the enemy a lot of times, so you gotta automatically get your mind framed up so that the enemy is actually God. And
right. Yeah, it's the twist on it. And if you hadn't heard our introduction, Screwtape is the chief demon. Wormwood is his... imagine in the army terms, he's private, that he's coaching, and he's coaching him to be as good as he is. He's had a lot of experience at demonic influence, and he's coaching Wormwood along those lines. And these are letters he's writing to him, course correcting his work that he's doing.
Sure.
And interestingly, you never hear the feedback. You never hear Wormwood's feedback. It's always just related that Screwtape has it and is doing that course.
We only get one side of the correspondence.
Right. Yeah. So I love the way he talks about the focus of the patient and the idea being, and I think as listeners, you can relate to this as well, which is the demonic side is trying to make you confused, is trying to make you unfocused on God, and is trying to make you question the divine. So even in the divine that you see, whether it's an amazing sunsets or mountains or the immensity of the world, and it forces you to, what they want to do is force you back to just ordinary thinking, Don't go too deep. Now, and Galen, you mentioned in our introduction about the magical and
the materialistic.
And the materialistic, mm-hmm. right. You know, so talking the materialistic is like, oh, that's a bus. We made that bus. It's mankind did it. There's nothing divine about that.
Don't but not just make the bus, catch the bus then. Like, get, right. get caught up in the busyness of everyday life that like, can overlook the weighty things of the world. Like, this is, a lot of this letter is, hey, keep your patient focused on just the busyness of life.
Right, the ordinary.
All of the yeah. ordinary little things. Don't let him get caught up on arguments. Don't let him get thinking too deeply. He might stumble onto God, essentially, is the big point.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. When you look at people you know who are searching for God, that if you've got all these distractions of TV and music and life and work, when is the time to ever discover it? One of C.S. Lewis's brilliant quotes, the devil wanted to make the world so noisy that you wouldn't be able to hear the voice of God. That's mm-hmm. one of his famous quotes. And I think that was 1939. And maybe the premise for this book is that if the devil has a way to keep you off God's trail and keep you focused on, like you said, the magical and the material, then you're not going to look through it to the divine.
Mm-hmm.
Screwtape notes to Wormwood, he said, look, the job at hand is to fuddle humans. And I love the word fuddle. It's something I probably used when I grew up in England. And I guarantee I heard it from my mother or my grandfather as well. But the historical idea of it is if you fuddle someone, you actually make them drunk with... It has an intoxicating effect.
Yeah,
brilliant. And I think it's really purposeful that he used that word within here, because we all know that, you know, we make terrible decisions when you've had too many nuts to drink. And
sure.
The reason people stop drinking is because they make terrible decisions, whether it's drink driving, abuse, any illicit things. It's that. And so using that word, you know, to fuddle someone is great. As a reference for people listening, if in your life you feel that, one, you don't have time to sit quietly or to seek God, look around at the things that are fuddling you. You know, what are those things? Have you got a pattern that you can break in there to break that befuddlement and actually find a space to a different path for yourself?
Yeah, the things that tend to get the bulk of our time, whereas alcohol has an intoxicating effect to, like, numb the senses and desensitize you. He's using the word here to talk about, like, just keep all of the common things of life in front of him. Don't let him think too deeply. Just keep him focused on all the silliness of life, and that'll have a numbing effect. It'll numb his spiritual senses. Get him too caught up with the mundane. Get him too caught up with the everyday things. And when you catch a stream of thought, he says, I caught a stream of thought or a train of thought in his mind beginning to go the wrong way.
In other words, a good way.
It's like I caught him having a moment where he was thinking about praying, or having, like, you know, maybe thinking about the Lord on the bus. Quick, get a newspaper in his hand, or in our world today, get Twitter in front of his eyes. You know, get social media, get some screen time up. There's the fuddlement right there.
You know, I remember growing up and going on holidays in England, vacations, and we'd be driving up through the hills in Wales. And hearing the term, wow, look at what God has made.
Mm.
And to this idea of the mundane and the distractions of life, I don't think people ever pick up Twitter and go, look at what God has made. I've never seen those two.
You've
related,
never seen the marvel and the marvel of creation.
Or TV. Everyone's going, wow, God made TV.
Yeah, they have a different type of marvel. Yeah,
yeah, right. Because I think one of them... you can actually see the divine in it. And the other, there may be divine in technology, but it doesn't come across. And so it becomes a bigger distraction. And we know with, and again, this could be something for people listening that is your distractor, which is Instagram. It could be Twitter. It could be, next reel. And you can spend hours doing that. I think I went over my kids' screen time. I'm like, 5 hours? And they're like, oh, most of it I was playing music. I'm like, okay, well, how much is Instagram? Oh, yeah, 1.5 hours. I'm like, doing what?
Next.
And
we're all guilty of it.
We are. I follow some good things, and I do it a little bit. I try to restrain myself from spending a lot of time on it, and especially taking away from more important things that I'm doing, spending time with the family and what. But, yeah, again, something to watch.
Right.
Because, again, these are the things that ultimately don't make you a better life. We've seen the statistics on suicides, on depression, all go up the more social media is in the world.
Yeah, it's not helping anything.
It's absolutely not. Now, they use a term in here as well. He says, jargon is the best ally for keeping man from the church.
Mm.
Right? And I love that word because...
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Jargon meaning terms that are difficult for the common man to understand, right? Because, again, I think what he's saying is keep it simple, stupid. Keep it where you're not going to get him thinking too much. Because the moment they start thinking, maybe they start connecting.
Mm-hmm.
The moment they start connecting, then the devil's in trouble of trying to direct you in the way you actually want to go with those sort of things. He also says don't argue with the patient. He says he wants to make things, like you said, fixated on day-to-day pleasures. So, reference-wise, this whole idea of don't argue with him, don't get him thinking too much, don't get him focused on the sciences, try and keep him, that's an interesting thought, that they want to keep you there rather than a specific, especially within this letter, place they want to take you.
Well, he calls if you're patient, so if your mind starts to go down the arena of considering arguments and considering truth and considering what is real and what is meaningful, you start to ask the deeper questions. He calls that, well, now you're treading onto the enemy's ground. You're going to struggle if your patient goes there, because that's going to be a difficult battle.
Right.
Because ultimately what that's doing is if your patient starts asking the big questions, the enemy doesn't have anything to offer to combat that.
Right.
It literally, all truth is God's truth.
But because they're against everything, right? So all they're going to tell you is a negative regarding questions.
Right. Yeah. They're going to throw obstacles, but ultimately it says you're not going to have much of a chance of winning that argument. It calls it propaganda, basically.
But, yeah.
Try to convince them it's just propaganda.
And again, that's an interesting way that when people listen to this and they listen to the narration or read the book, you've got to, again, and we'll reiterate it, you've got to put yourself in the mindset of you're on the dark side. So they talk about our Father in hell rather than our Father in heaven.
Right. And our Father below.
Below, exactly. That's the right term. And they talk about the enemy being God. So you have to twist your mind in that to look at it from that point of view.
Well, I think it's also interesting. He says, he points out that's just a common struggle of man. We're both spirit and flesh. We have to not get caught up in the mundane, but we have to live in it.
Right.
Like, I mean, at some point you're going to get hungry. And Jesus had to rest. Jesus went and took a nap. Go be like Jesus, take a nap.
Right.
Yeah. So and he has a really funny line there. He actually references the incarnation of Jesus. He says, he's telling, remember, Wormwood, he's not like you in a pure spirit, because the demonic realm are just spirit.
Right.
So they never have to eat. They never have to sleep. They never get caught up with the latest album that's coming out, or the Super Bowl that's coming up, or whatever it is. They never get caught up. They're just pure spirit. He says, but he's not like you. He's never having been human. And he says, oh, the abominable advantage of the enemies.
Do you think he talks about it in there that he, or assumes that the demonic realm envy the spirits that God creates within us?
I think he's referencing the fact that the demonic realm envy the empathy that God has, because God took on flesh. So God
right.
is spirit.
Yeah.
But Jesus came incarnate, took on flesh. So Jesus knows what it's like to struggle and just struggle with, you know, being hungry and not wasting your energy. He had to make sure that he was on task fulfilling his mission and calling that God had for him. Jesus can empathize with us. And that puts the enemy, our true enemy, puts the demonic at a disadvantage.
Right. So that's where you think he was going within that.
I think 100%. He said, oh, that the abominable advantage of the enemies.
And right.
In other words, Jesus can empathize. He can relate to them. And we can either kind of embrace that empathy that he has for us, to know that the one that walked like we walked and lived like
that's
we
brilliant
lived.
That you pulled that. I never got that from first reading it.
But yeah,
that,
I,
that's,
I'm pretty, I,
that's really
I bet
purposeful.
That, bet money that's what he's getting at. But I think the point is, though, it's like we do have the flesh that we have to struggle with, in good ways and bad ways. We struggle with temptation and things like that. But then also, just like I said, getting caught up in the mundane. You know, you have to live your life. You got to spend a portion of your time going to work to make a living. You
yeah.
know, so it gets very easy to get so caught up in it. He's saying use that to your advantage. But we do embrace the spiritual. But we have to navigate the flesh as we do that. So his advice overall is, as he's going down the spiritual route, diffuse him, get him caught up on the simple fleshly carnal things.
Right, exactly. And you hear in there that, and they do set this up in letter one, that Screwtape has the regard for the devil, his master, in the same way it mirrors our respect for God and our regard for Jesus. I think that's purposely done, again, to mirror that, to get you thinking, and also to set the stage that it's drawing a exact counterfeit of God's kingdom below, within the whole idea that, like, it isn't just a few, the devil and a few of it, there's a whole realm of evil.
A whole realm with a whole rank, a whole
right.
hierarchy, a whole system and structure, a value system, and everything. Everything, as it's often said, everything God creates, Satan counterfeits, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, there's one thing that I heard in there that got me thinking, and this question for you, which is, it says in there that Screwtape, that he sees the human train of thought, but he says he can't hear God's voice. Is there any biblical reference for that?
He says...
Because I've always heard that the demons can't read your mind.
They can't read your mind. So that is commonly understood. It's probably a pretty widely accepted belief that, if you need to pray silently, that way the enemy can't read your mind. If you're praying spiritual warfare, praying for help and things like that, if you pray silently to God, or if you're thinking things, that the enemy cannot read your mind. There's not a good biblical basis one way or another, but I mean, I would kind of take the devil's advocate position on that, so to speak. I don't think that's true. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. I think overall, if I had to say one way or another, I'd say probably the demonic does have the ability to know what we're thinking. If nothing else, from the standpoint of they've existed, they've been studying humanity. Like I said, we're flesh, so we live and die.
Yeah.
The demonic doesn't. They never sleep. They never need to rest. They're always going. So, first of all, they know our behavior. You can know what your son's thinking just because you can see what's going on. And you don't need to actually read his thoughts to know what he's thinking. So I think they have that advantage. But when the devil engages in temptation, there is some connection between the physical realm and the spiritual realm. And where exactly that line is drawn, I don't know, and I don't know that we'll ever know. But I think our thoughts kind of is in that space between that connects the physical realm and the spiritual realm. The physical realm is just electrons, electrical signals triggering in our brains. But at some point, that does also engage in the spiritual realm. And I think Satan and his minions can at times have some insight to that.
I would think so.
Yeah, I think almost without a doubt. I don't know
how like you said about I could look at my son and. And we know it with little children. You're like, I know what you're about to do. Again, you know when your wife's upset. You know when people have, okay, we need. What do you need to talk to me about? Sure. So I think if we can see that, I would tend to think that the dark side has that same sort of insight.
And also the opportunity to plant thoughts of seeds of temptation and things like that. So I think in the demonic realm, you have demonic possession. A demon can completely possess somebody. Yeah. They can indwell them and can completely control their body. You have demonic obsession and demonic oppression. So I think you have some different tiers of the way that the demonic can impact and influence us. But I just personally, I do believe even for the Christian, I think there at times our thoughts can be vulnerable to be understood and seen to those in the spiritual
right.
realm.
And yep. then used against us.
And exactly. Because the whole point, what he's getting at here, he has a scenario. I could see his mind I could see a train of thought that was going in a bad direction. In other words, he was probably having a good quiet moment. He was probably considering something meaningful or weighty in life. And he said, now's a good time to try to derail that. And I think it's really interesting. Then Screwtape comes and he gives an example. He says, "Oh, so I had. Let me tell you a story, Wormwood.
Right.
I'll tell you a story of a guy that I had once. And he was sitting, and it, you know, basically paints a scenario where this guy was, who knows, maybe reading the Bible, maybe contemplating Scripture, maybe somebody was praying for him. The Lord was starting to get through. And he said, I tried to convince him that he ought to just grab a meal and revisit this after lunch. In other words, don't keep pressing on.
Right.
Just hurry up and cut it off. And I think there's actually a really good lesson there. When you start to make progress in an area, it's almost like when you do a workout, you have to get a couple sets in. And then when you're hurting, then when you want to stop and you want to give up, that's when you stand to gain the most.
Right, and you can get further with it.
But if you just do that one more set or throw a little bit more weight and you come all that way to wear your muscles down. I think spiritually, a lot of times it's the same way. This guy, he paints this picture of this guy that was going down a path of thought, probably guided by the Spirit. And if I could just maybe spend a little bit more time in prayer, maybe take some action steps from that. And he's like, hurry up, convince him, do it after lunch, and then throw a newspaper in his face and just distract him.
And then the bus comes by and they're on with their everyday mundane tasks.
Boom.
Yeah.
Boom.
So it's interesting because in this first letter, it's almost they're giving us the picture of the attack. They're giving us the idea of this is happening in the background and there's not much in the way of effect happening now on the patient. So as takeaways for our listeners, one of the things I would ask is look at things in your life. And Galen, you said it brilliantly earlier when you were talking about the workout analogy, which is when you find a good time to read the Bible, pray, have a quiet moment talking to God, try and find a way to extend that.
Mm.
I think that came to me as a thought that we should. Someone should have here, which is, and like you said, if you're feeling good at the gym and you were going to do half an hour and you're feeling great, do 45 minutes. And in the same way as if you're praying and you said you're going to do one or two chapters of a book of the Bible, do
one
three
more.
Or four.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Lean into that emotion. What do you think is takeaways?
Yeah. I think also identify the things that become the distractions. What are the things that are easily coming into your life to interrupt the sacred moments or to stop the momentum of good things. You also mentioned earlier, what are the patterns that tend to have it? We are creatures of habit. We are creatures of patterns. Whether it's a vice, we all tend to have the same vices that will get us. Identify the things that become the go-tos to throw us off of what might be a good pattern or a good rhythm.
Well, think of it from military terms. There's nothing that in war that's like more than knowing the enemy's hands.
Sure, exactly.
So if they know exactly when the watch changes or when this person walks that way or the way an army maneuvers, it's easier to attack them. So again, it's varying that routine will get you away from stopping those patterns that make you fall into whether it's alcoholism or lust or whatever that is that in your life that brings you down. I think this is a great way to fight back against that.
Totally. Yeah. I would also say kind of good takeaway is maybe stop and evaluate that balance of spirit and flesh. You know, do you walk? We all have to have both, and we're not called to walk in the works of the flesh. We're to put aside the works of the flesh and pursue the spirit. But that concept of living in the average and the mundane, we all have to do it. Do we do that and still have a healthy cadence of understanding the spiritual as well? Do you err on one side too much or the other? It's also not good to be so heavenly minded that you're of no earthly good. So there really is a balance.
Because you are flesh.
We are flesh, you know, and the enemy will use the mundane, not just to tempt your flesh to get you into sexual sin or something like that, but to use your flesh to just, you know, quite frankly, sometimes I get home and I'm just exhausted at the end of the day. And I know I could invest in my family, invest in my son, invest in my marriage. But I really just want to sit down and pull out Twitter and just relax and unplug. And that's not a bad thing. But like, how do you manage that? Does the spirit win out? Does the flesh win out? And where would you rate yourself in it? Are there areas you can improve?
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, join us for the Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. That's it for Letter 1.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.